Okay. Who are you?
I'm William Allerman, and I'm the practice manager for the SOA practice with Microsoft Services.
And what are we going to talk about today?
We're going to talk about one of the solutions that we have built for customers called the Managed Services Engine.
And what does MSE do?
MSE is a solution that builds on top of WCF and SQL Server to provide service virtualization to help with problems like service versioning, protocol mapping, really providing the right service for the right scenario.
And Chris Madrid did an interview with the guys on Code to Live on their podcast, and he showed a little bit about some versioning capabilities. What are you going to show us today?
Well, I thought we'd take a look at some of the protocol mapping that we can do by hosting endpoints of different protocols on top of the same functionality. And then I thought we'd also look at some of the policy and how we can tie into BAM to provide visibility into the activity at runtime through those different endpoints.
And BAM being the
business activity monitoring.
Is that the stuff that comes out with BizTalk?
With BizTalk, that's right.
Oh, exactly. Very cool. So you're able to tie in like multiple things, but you don't suffer from the not invented here syndrome like
No. The
rest of CSD, right?
No, we really look to take advantage of other capabilities and products because we don't want to have to build everything.
Very cool. All right. Well, let's take a look.
All right. So everything that we have today in our model, which serves as the foundation for MSE, is stored in a SQL Server and its metadata, and we access it today through an MMC snap-in. It works fairly well, but it's a little bit crude. It's good for technical people, but we are working on a next-gen UI and WPF.
Well, you got to go out of process for a calculator, too.
But
everybody has to go out of process for a calculator.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's calculator services, but you know what? I think we're going to avoid that one. But this tree view actually shows all the entities that are stored in our model, in our repository. That includes schemas, includes operations and versions of operations, as well as endpoints, and then things like policies and bindings. Really, all the elements you would find in a config file for a WCF service, we actually store in the database. And what we do is we use that at runtime to dynamically define services that can be consumed.
Okay.
So looking through here, you can see we've got different operations. And as you said before, Chris Madrid did a demo on some of the functionality around versioning of the operation. So I thought we'd take a look at some of the endpoint behavior and being able to create new endpoints dynamically using this model. So what I'm going to do here is go through a simple process of just creating a new endpoint. And so this URL basically starts with, first of all, defining a port and a path for whatever runtime host it'll be associated with. I'll get to the runtime host in a minute. But for the purpose of this demo, I'm just going to pick, a random port, 8091, and I'm going to say this is, so what's this presentation called? This Channel 9, right?
Channel 9.
Channel 9. I'm going to call it Channel 9 Service. How about that?
It is a little Microsoft site.
Yeah, Channel 9 Service.
Okay.
And I'm going to say it's, SOAP 1.1 is the binding that we're going to associate with that endpoint. So I'm going to create that, and we have an endpoint, but it's not associated with a runtime server yet. Now, our approach to service virtualization can be thought of as very similar to server virtualization in that, you'd have a host, a system host, that would spin up new instances of systems virtually. Well, we do the same thing. We actually have a service host, which is a Windows service, and that Windows service is able to spin up new services with new endpoints dynamically just using metadata.
Well, so you don't have to actually go through WCF and create your own contract, create the implementation, put it inside the host, do the little test host and all that other stuff, right?
Right, yeah. We actually have one host that can host everything, for the brokering of the service request. Now, the implementation, we don't actually host that. So we don't really consider the solution a host. It's really more of an intermediary. Some people call that a broker pattern. And so what we do is we basically broker the communication between the client and the actual implementation, which may be a SOAP service, but might also be a SQL server, it might be a queue, it might be a mainframe system.
And the value being here then, since you have the brokered model, that you can do things like runtime, policy enforcement, SLAs, and you could do all this other stuff because you're the guy that's processing it, right?
Exactly, yeah. Since we're the one brokering the communication, we're in an ideal position to either observe what's going on and collecting information, but also to enforce, and enforcing things like policy, security models, auditing, checking to see if somebody's account is in good enough standing to actually use the service, for instance.
Oh, very cool. Okay.
So the runtime, in this case, I'm running this on a VPC, and I only have one runtime server. You can have as many runtime servers as you want, but what I have to do is I have to associate that endpoint I just created with that runtime server, which is my host. So I'm just going to go here, and you'll see it's already hosting a lot of different endpoints, but I'm going to pick that Channel 9 service that I just created. And so I'm going to add that and apply. Now my runtime server just received an event that said there's a new endpoint that you care about. And so he's actually getting the information from the service catalog and figuring out what it takes to actually host that service. Now what he just found out, though, is that while I've got an endpoint, I don't actually have any capabilities exposed there. You'll see here where it says operations exposed, it's empty. I haven't actually associated any capabilities with it yet. So what I'm going to do is go to the operations section of my tree view, and I'm going to pick... process CC payment, process credit card payment. And what I can do is go through here and add this capability to the endpoint. And that was my Channel 9 service endpoint. And here I have the ability to specify whether or not I want this active as well as published. And this is an important concept with our service virtualization because we're able to differentiate what's published through the contract versus what's actually executable. And so this really helps with versioning because initially, you know, let's say you start with version 1.0 of a function, everything works great. But as soon as you want to make a change, people do very unnatural things today to get around the fact that WSDL doesn't support versioning. And so they'll create, you know, get customer underscore V2 and get customer underscore V3 or
guilty.
Something like that.
Read my blog, guilty.
While that works, it's a little problematic because now people have a WSDL that has three different versions, and the decision's left to them as to, well, which one do they actually use?
Right.
And so we have the ability to say you can have a function actually executable through the endpoint, but it's not necessarily discoverable. So now you can just show version 3, and it still has get customer with whatever contract you're willing to sign up for, but you don't break everybody that was already using it.
Oh, so there's the nirvana, is that, and the reason that we've always relied on doing new interfaces and trying to version that way is because we're scared breaking all the old client, introducing new functionality. But through this, through a brokered model, you control the communication through both, right?
Exactly, exactly. So we truly have side-by-side, but it's not side-by-side public. And so nobody knew, you won't propagate the old version. You've cut it off and said no one can ever discover the new one. They'll always discover the new one, and you know, old customers will continue to use the old one. And then you can gracefully, you know, sunset them when appropriate.
Hence the term service virtualization, right?
Exactly.
Very cool. Okay. And where we're at, so you activate and also publish.
Yep, I'm going to activate and publish because there's only one, and that builds the association. So I now have a capability, an operation, actually exposed. And if I go back now to my Channel 9 service, which is right here, you'll see it lists it, process CC payment. So what I'm going to do now is pull up a browser and show you what one of these endpoints looks like. So what I need to do is type in the go to my local system, and it was port 8091, right? Yes. And channel 9 service. And it pulls up just like a WCF service would, with the same kind of help screen. And if I click on the WSDL, I get a WSDL that looks just like a regular WSDL with some additional documentation. If somebody actually were to read the WSDL, which doesn't happen very often, it'll actually tell you how this is specifically version 1.0, and you can actually reference this in your SOAP action to explicitly request this version.
Wow. All right. So the reason that I'm finding this so cool is because typically if you're going to do this in WCF, you have to write implementation first to be able to gen the WSDL in the first place. You started
right.
out contract completely first without implementation being a consideration.
Right, right. We really view the WSDL, instead of being a static resource that should be stored and managed, it actually is something to be dynamically defined by the relationships. In this case, the operation hosted at the endpoint.
Oh, that's
slick. And so that's
slick.
What generates the WSDL. So that WSDL is all dynamic. It's generated dynamically when the runtime server creates the endpoint.
Oh, that's slick. That's pretty cool.
So that's what the WSDL looks like, but we'll do something more interesting and actually consume this service now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull up a test client that we have created that allows us to discover endpoints. And you'll see it pulls up process CC payment, and it's the basic HTTP binding. Mm-hmm. And if I double-click on that, it'll actually create a stub for a request for me. And all I've got to do is put in some values that are close enough to being a match to actually invoke the service. So let me put in some information. in an amount. So, I mean, basically, this process CC payment is just a stubbed out piece of logic. The implementation is actually a WCF console host. In fact, I've got it right. Nope, that's not it. I've got it right here. That actually processes the payment. So as we do the payment processing, you should see an event actually triggered there. But I will go ahead and test this. And there's my response. And there it is. Process CC payment was invoked. So it tells me that the implementation was hit. And there we go. Now, that's a pretty straightforward scenario and relationship. Not a lot of complexity in there. The implementation is a WCF service, and if we go into the details of the implementation, we'll actually see that this is being invoked through a URL with a specific SOAP action and is using a basic HTTP binding behind it. So really, we're just kind of impersonating the service in this model with a different endpoint, a different name for the operation. But what we can do is we can actually map that to a different protocol. So let me take that same Channel 9 service that we created. And now, let me change the binding to plain old XML, the POX binding. So I can apply this, and it's going to come up and tell me that you're not going to have any metadata because that's the way POX works. There is no metadata for it. I'll go ahead and accept that yes, I know I'm going to make a breaking change. Anybody using the endpoint would now be broken. But I want to just demonstrate the fact that this is all done dynamically, and we can do this protocol mapping. So what I want to do now is go back to my test client, and the URL I doesn't change. It's still the same destination for the message. However, now it needs to be POX. So what I have to do is strip out the SOAP here and the body, and now it's just raw XML. It's the same request, but it's now raw XML without the SOAP.
All your high-res fans are starting to drool over this one.
Oh, yes. Oh, and of course, I do need to change my binding. I've got to tell my client what binding to use because the binding obviously changed. And so what I'm going to do here is go to my bindings, which are stored. I'm going to, just do a cheat here. Of course, it's just message version equals none. I'm going to grab this binding. I'm going to paste this into my client. And there we go. Got my binding. Now I can test the operation. And there's my result. So it invoked the exact same piece of logic now through a plain old XML binding. Now, here's something else that we can do. Doesn't matter if it's POX or if it's, WS star or what have you, we can apply policy to endpoints. And one of the policies that we provide is actually a BAM policy. Now, we implement policy through WCF behaviors. So if I go back to that endpoint, you'll see that we have a drop-down here called policy. Policies are another entity that are stored in our metadata model, and here's a list of them here. We've got a BAM policy, a regular expression filter, a value filter, a turn off metadata publishing, which is just leveraging standard WCF capabilities, and then WCF throttling, which is also a WCF capability. These are all behaviors that are implemented through policies, and they're described by XAML. If you take a look at this, this information, this metadata, is actually XAML. And so what we're doing is in the stack, we're passing XAML through, and XAML is instantiating the right behavior as part of the stack. As part of the definition of the endpoint, or the definition of the channel, wherever the policy is applied. So we leverage the XAML quite a bit to instantiate things dynamically.
This is pretty cool.
So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to take this endpoint, and I'm going to apply the BAM policy and apply. And again, it's going to tell me that POX doesn't have metadata. I know that. Now, I've just refreshed everything here automatically in my tool, but again, an event was sent to the runtime engine to tell it that something about the endpoint changed, and he just found out that I need to now rebuild the endpoint because behaviors are part of the stack. So he's going to have to rebuild that endpoint with that behavior to now affect the right policy. Now, nothing changed about how I consumed that service. Nothing. That was not a client impacting policy. It was an observation policy that's meaningful to the provider only. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to test this a couple more times, just invoking the service. Because what I'm going to do now is I'm going to pull up our reporting system we leverage SQL reporting services out of the box to actually provide reporting information on the BAM data. So every time I made a request, information was sent to the BAM behavior asynchronously, and it collected all that information, and we have an activity model that we defined based on all the little entities that we store in our model that allows us to build reports. And we've actually built reports that are specific to the different roles in the organization that would care to have that level of visibility. So what I'll pull up first is architect level reports, and I'll pull up service activity. And what we'll see here is that we've got a set of operations that are defined and are exposing which capabilities, or which endpoints are we actually receiving requests through. And what we'll see here is that I made a request 5 times against that Channel 9 service endpoint. And so that endpoint was actually captured. So that even though it was a POX request, I was still able to add BAM and actually collect that. And you can see that same operation was also invoked across other endpoints through other demos and other representations.
So this is going to be different than just the normal operations view of WCF, where you do like WMI through the service model to be able to see how, you know, check what is the current, use a perfmon basically to be able to see the current activity. This is persisted long running, so you could do long running reports over time.
Absolutely. Correlation of activity, you know, by day, by week, by quarter, that type of things. We also do perf counters, and we'll actually send out perf counters that can be collected by System Center or some other tool to actually show real-time data for operational purposes and alerting and so forth.
Right.
But this is a deeper level of information that provides insight into, you know, various levels across a long period of time, as you mentioned.
And again, a functionality provided by the business activity monitoring capabilities of BizTalk, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Very
and
cool.
Then in this case, SQL Server reporting on top of that. Let me go back to another set of reports, IT operations. IT operations typically want to see operation requests by endpoint. And so what we can do here is just reference, you know, a runtime server, and then there's my Channel 9 service, my endpoint I just created for this demo, and view that report. And it will actually show me things like, you know, which versions of which operations were invoked. Now I only have one version of that operation actually running there. But if I click on it, on the report, it'll actually take me the details. It'll actually show me each individual request that was made against that endpoint. And then I can drill down even further, courtesy of BAM, into getting all the details of, you know, if I'm doing authentication, who actually invoked it, finding out all the systems that were touched along the way, and every bit of information that's available. So it allows you that drill down capability. Another thing is, you know, something like business reports, that's really a higher level of information. They typically just want to see, based on, you know, capabilities, you know, what's the rate of success and failure. And again, you have the ability to drill down and specify, but it's a different level of granularity. It's the same information, but a different view of that information, which we found to be very important for customers.
Viewers, where can they go find more information?
Yeah, so the MSC is available in a couple different ways. First is through an MCS offering, service offering. We actually leverage this with customers as part of our engagements, leveraging BizTalk, SQL Server, and so forth. But it's actually available also as a download on CodePlex, codeplex.com/services-engine, and it comes with an MSI that'll install, you know, everything. It's a configurable installation. You can put it all on a desktop or spread it out across many boxes. It also includes labs and documentation with walkthrough guides, so people can actually walk through many of the things I just showed.
Very cool. Thank you very much for taking the time, Will.
Certainly.